The Short Game is listener-supported on Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and join us on our Discord, head to theshortgame.net or patreon.com/theshortgame.
Welcome back to The Short Game. This is a show about short video games, games that respect your time. I'm Reagan Kelly, and I'm joined this week by two fantastic co-hosts.
I am the void that fills the night, Leoniger.
And I'm your favorite vampire girlfriend, Shane Kelly.
And this week we are talking about El Paso Elsewhere, a game from Strange Scaffold and game director Jalvir Nelson Jr. And I've been champing at the bit to talk about this on the show for a while, because I had this slightly unusual situation where, like, I just happened to really pick this up way before anybody else in the show, and I like finished it and I was like, this was amazing. I really want to talk about it. And then like 2.5 weeks worth of schedule stuff has come up. So like usually when I'm going into an episode like this, I'm like right off of the game. This time, yeah. I loved this game 3 weeks ago, and it's just a little bit different for me, but man, did I love this game.
Yeah. This game's pretty awesome. Its vibes are immaculate, and it has a, it's a revival of a style that I liked back in the day, haven't seen in a while. And it's just so rare that we get to do a shooter on this show.
I know.
And I just love shooting things.
Yeah, and not like a thing like aping the shooter genre or some like narrative take on the complexities and the intricacies of the concept of a shooter or something that we're doing, you know, very frequently on this show.
Uh-huh.
It's just a straight up and down. You are shooting vampires and werewolves with a multitude of different guns, and it's a pretty well designed. It's throwback in its aesthetics, but it is it feels like a very modern shooter, just straight up and down third person shooter, which I can't even remember. I don't think we've ever done a game like this for the show, and I can't remember playing a game like this since there's an easy comp to this for Max Payne, and I feel like that's how long ago it was since I've played a game like
I think
this.
The closest that we've played for the show is probably Chop Goblins, which is a throwback shooter, but it's a bit of a different type. So this game is a first of all, visually, this game is very firmly in the like retro throwback PlayStation 1 era graphics. It does a lot with that palette, but it's very rooted in the sort of like low poly.
It was cracking me up because the character model, at least on my little Steam Deck, it's pretty dumb looking.
Yeah.
You know, and
it's got
a very
square nose.
Yeah, the whole thing is very stupid looking. But the dialogue and like the tone and everything of the game is so heavy.
Like, I know you're kind of being a little tongue in cheek there, but like, I think that aesthetically this absolutely whips. Like, it's stupid looking is, I think, maybe a little much. This is
maybe it's
very
harsh,
very,
but it made me laugh.
Retro styled.
Yeah.
But like it reads, and when it does, it really just lots of hallways and asset reuse, and basic 3D geometry that looks, this looks a little bit PS1, a little bit early PC, a little bit Quake, but then it will do something that wows you, surprises you, even if it's just something wild, like a really strange skybox or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings back some of that like wow factor of just basic stuff from PC games from the early 2000s or so. So I don't know. Visually, I thought this was like pretty awesome.
And the monsters move in a smoothness and a pace and a sort of like aggression that I don't think was capable in games like this as far as what it's emulating aesthetically. But maybe stupid's too strong of a word, but I definitely laughed most of the time they would zoom in on the guy's face and he would say something really, you know, really dark and really twisted.
My favorite moment in the whole game was there's a cutscene between every level, and the levels are short, and usually they're a few sentences long, but one of them he's just sitting on a hotel bed, you know, looking intensely at the wall, 1,000-yard stare on his little polygonal face, and he says, "I think I just killed a werewolf in that bathroom."
There's a lot of bathrooms in this
game. Yeah, and so, you know, gameplay wise, like, I actually think that the shooter element of this, just like the straight up, like, this is a shooter, you're shooting a lot of enemies, it is good, but it's mostly fine, is like where I land on this. Like, I had a ton of fun playing this game. It absolutely got its hooks into me. I was very compelled by it. But I will also say that, like, what really drew me through this wasn't really the visuals, which were cool at times, but also very basic. And it wasn't really the shooter gameplay, which was thrilling, exciting, fun at times, but also pretty basic. We'll talk about some of the mechanics a little bit.
I don't know if basic is the right word. I have to push back here because there's a lot going on aesthetically here. It is using simple parts, and that's the kind of the nature of the retro style for the kind of PlayStation low poly, you know, aesthetic. But what it's doing within that is kind of playing in this dreamlike space where the world is intentionally, you know, reality is being bent in ways that are both aesthetically really interesting and also very video gamey, in a way that kind of comes together nicely. The fact that they take the roof off of all the levels solves a horrible camera problem, but it also creates this incredibly interesting space where, you know, you can kind of peer over walls with the camera and things like that.
Shoot guys through walls sometimes.
Yeah.
When they clip through, you can shoot them through it, which I thought was great.
What it does with lighting is not at all a retro kind of throwback. They do a lot with lighting and color that doesn't really line up with it kind of having a straight up retro aesthetic. It has more of a kind of weird dreamlike quality to it. But, you know, on top of that, marrying that to the gameplay, because a lot of the lighting is based on, like, you know, you can kind of tell which direction to move through the levels, or there's a very amusing equivalent of a colored key card system. There's a lot of things that give this a visual mojo that is not exactly what I would have initially thought of when I thought, oh, hey, this will be kind of like a Max Payne clone. Now, that said, I do want to talk about Max Payne because there were some very cool, interesting design choices going on in that game.
Yeah. One thing I want to say before we talk about that is that this is I had basically forgotten the connection between, like, yes, I know, like, there's the Max Payne games, Remedy games, same developer as, like, Control and Alan Wake. But, like, this is a game that, like, unifies those two vibes way more than I was expecting. This is like, it's a Max Payne gameplay, but, like, the world, like Shane was saying, it's very, like, it's playing in this sort of, like, heightened surreal, like, Remedy loves to do things in a weird fucked up motel.
Did you guys play Control?
Yes, man. Oh, yeah. So good. Okay. And this has, like, a lot of, like, Control aesthetics unified with Control that. Too. This game almost out-Remedies Remedy. It's really, it's a really good tribute to not just, like, one or the other, but, like, all of the works from Remedy.
So while we're talking about that, a thing that stood out to me on this game that I'd only ever felt on Control. Now, I didn't actually finish Control, but I did love it. That's kind of how I am with games sometimes. I think we all are.
I love it.
So I don't usually really get, like, scared playing video games, like horror games or anything like that. I never really feel that feeling of, like, tension or whatever. Even, you know, we've done a bunch of horror games and I just same thing with movies. I don't know why. It's just not a feeling that I feel very much in these sorts of things. However, Control and this game, the sound, I'm starting to realize there's something about this audio quality that they pull off in this game and they pulled off in Control that did give me, it's like the most uneasy I have felt playing a video game, I think, ever. Is this like, there's like lots of whisperings and like weird little sounds throughout the whole thing that just really made me uncomfortable in like the way I think that they're intending. And I don't know, it really stood out to me because I don't usually feel that very much during games. And I felt like, oh, I don't like being here in a lot of the levels where they really amped that up.
Yeah, I agree. It has incredible sound design throughout. And the sound design, the like background, you know, rustling, the sound of a creature, of like a weird undead vampire creature sort of shuffling towards you in the background. That's excellent. But also
great music,
incredible soundtrack, incredible.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was the soundtrack was wild. Another thing that made me laugh, but again, I think that's partly intentional to some degree. I think from the developers, it's like an early 2000s rap rock sort of thing that like, you know, it's perfect throwback. Did you guys watch the show Misfits? It was a British show.
No. Wait, I think I watched a couple of episodes of that. Yeah. Remind me what it's about.
It's like all these like teenagers.
A vampire and a ghost and a werewolf are roommates in a something yeah, like that. One. Is that about it?
No, that's not what that is. But it's all these kids get superpowers and it gets
about right.
Wild. But anyway, it's like the Rapture was a band that I used to really like that did the theme song to that. And it had some similarities to what they were doing in this game. But yeah, I mean, there's like full on hip hop songs in this game.
Yeah. Crazy thing about this, blasting. A lot of hip hop songs.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, I mentioned like Xavier Nelson Jr. He's all over this game. He wrote all of the dialogue. He is the director of the game and he wrote the lyrics and recorded all the rap. So
he's the one.
Yeah, he voices John Savage. He's also the
great name, by the character. John Savage.
So like he's all over this game, and it also feels very personal because of the story, which I'm sure we'll talk in more detail about. But like, yeah, like he worked with RJ Lake, who's the musician, and they initially were like planning to just have it be like, you know, music, right? Just game music. But I saw in an interview, they were saying, you know, we just kept sending tracks back and forth to each other saying, we need this vibe. We need this vibe. I want this vibe. And he realized the only stuff I'm sending him is stuff with lyrics. I think we just have to make a rap album. And so they did. And there is a two volume soundtrack. And one of them is just a straight up rap album.
It's pretty funny. It's similar to it made me think of the TMNT soundtrack too, where for like a second you think it's just you're like, oh, this is just like they found some, you know, unknown artist from the time and they're just like dropping these rap, you know, tracks on the game. And then in TMNT you hear them start rapping about pizza and shit and you're like, oh, okay, it's made. And then this one you hear like they like suddenly are rapping about slaying vampires, taking pills,
about, like,
you
know, finding ammo. Rapping so much, but it's also good rap. Like, I'm not a rap connoisseur, but like I enjoyed every time they played one of these songs. And sometimes they'll play it in a level that you're gonna end up playing multiple times, so you're gonna hear this same song several times, and I never minded. I loved it every time because it's good. It's fun to listen to. It's not every level that has a rap song with it. There's 50 levels in this game, 50. And there's about 12 rap songs on the soundtrack. So, you know, it was something that I would like look forward to, you know, when there would be a rap song in one of the levels. So it was really cool.
When's John Savage dropping his next Savage track?
I know.
Give me those bars. No, you just like, oh, Nate. Oh, come on. Listen, I'm an old man.
I gave Shane a thumbs down. That was good podcasting. I was doing,
remember to really make your jokes with gestures on the program, guys. But yeah, like I loved that, and it added so much to the vibe. Something else that we haven't talked about, this game is really, it really stands out in a bunch of ways. It has a black main character, which is so rare in game, in action games. Like, you Reagan, don't get this very much.
I just realized that, and I couldn't tell because he was so rectangular and the lighting was so dim. I did not realize. Okay.
I mean, okay, but also, like, voiced by Zalavir Nelson Jr., he's okay. Black. But also, like, yeah, John Savage, he's a black guy. Like, this is a game where you're playing as a black guy, which is cool because you don't get so much of that in, like, as, like, the headliner of an action game.
Yeah, true that.
And, you know, featuring a rap soundtrack. Like, it kind of kicks ass. And, like,
argument here.
The super, story super badass. Is very personal. It's very, so, like, you know, the pitch for this game is you are a monster hunter, a vampire hunter, John Savage, badass extraordinaire, and your ex-girlfriend, Dracula, the basically girl Dracula, she has holed up with her cultists and her minions and a bunch of hostages in an El Paso motel, which has receded from reality. It's, you know, 50 floors of underground motel to fight through.
Is she the mother of Alucard?
You gotta assume.
I don't know what you what's Dracula backwards? Alucard, I guess.
Alucard. Yeah, because it's just Dracula with an E at the end is how they spell it.
And she's the vampire queen. She's your ex-girlfriend. So exploring the relationship there is one of the most fascinating threads through the game. But you're going, she's committing some kind of dark ritual that will end the world. And you're going in to stop her. You're, you know, to probably kill your ex to stop her from ending the world. And that sounds very pithy, like my ex-vampire girlfriend is going to end the world. I'm going to go shoot her. But the story, which was really what kept me going through this thing, is a story about a person who has left their abuser and then is going back to confront them. You get all of these scenes from and little recordings from and just moments about their past together. And they were, you know, in a relationship that started off good. And then Dracula is, you know, she's a monster. She never physically abused him. She never attacked him or anything like that. But the threat of violence, I mean, she is a vampire, but the threat of violence was always present in their relationship, and it poisoned things. And it was this, like, psychological abuse. And it's actually a really, I thought, well-done portrait of that type of abuse, which you don't expect in something as, I don't know, like, you know, Hammer Films as the premise here. It's like you don't expect it to have that level of sort of raw story reality to it.
Yeah, it doesn't even really need to have that to still be a successful game in this genre, right? Like you said, it sounds kind of pithy. To me, I'm like, that sounds like a great setup for a video game. You're a monster hunter who has to go and find their ex-girlfriend, the queen of vampires. Like, that sounds wonderful. That's part of what I want to play video games for. The fact that they take that and turn it also into something with far more meaning and far more personal attachment, I do think is quite an accomplishment. I agree with you. The story and the performance of John Savage, it really carries the game.
Yeah, the performances. There's really, like, this is a game about these two characters, right? About John Savage, obviously written but also voiced by Nelson, absolutely incredibly. Like, he does the sort of, like, almost over the top, like, I'm just a badass.
It's a good day to die.
Yeah, but it's also, like, it's not just a bunch of one-liners. He is talking about you know, his relationship with Dracula and like he's, you know, going into this expecting to die. He's constantly darkly funny, but also there's like a lot of real reality to his voice and just like it's well written, like really well written, and really well performed. But also the person who plays Dracula is incredible. I'm trying to find her name because I had it pulled up here and now it's missing. Full credits, clicking through Mobi Games trying to find it here. There we go. M. Montgomery. She does voice acting, but she's also a streamer. I thought it was very funny when I looked her up and realized that. Do you guys remember there's like a viral clip of a streamer playing The Last of Us Part 2? And there's that scene from The Last of Us Part 2 where there is a rabbit and she's like, that is the cutest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And then you know, Elle or whatever her name is, like shoots it with a bow and arrow and it very graphically gets impaled on screen. And the streamer just goes, ah! It's her. It's like that's streamer from that viral clip. But she's incredible in this. Like her, she has that sort of like, she's very, very naturalistic. You really buy that she is this like monster who doesn't know she's a monster, who just sees her relationship with John as just having like taken a weird turn and you know, she doesn't understand. Because she's gone so far down this path of like being a monster, she doesn't understand. She's
destroying the world.
Yeah, she's just trying to get back like what she once had, you know, her like power or whatever. But also, she's an abused person too. We get some picture of like, you know, the you know, hundreds of years of her personal history, and you know, she's a victim of abuse and is sort of passing it on. Really, really, really well done writing. And voice acting.
Well, I think now's a good time to mention, you know, you're not the only one who has noticed the depth of story. There was an article that came out, was it just last week, right in the middle of us sort of prepping for this episode, that Lakeith Stanfield is in the process of optioning and creating a movie out of this game. Which is pretty incredible. I love Lakeith Stanfield, and I would love very to cool. see him in this role and a full movie made out of this.
I think it'd be an incredible movie. Like, you can absolutely camp it up. Yeah. You can do the, like, you know, you could do the slow motion dives. We haven't even talked about the slow motion.
Yeah, we haven't talked about most of the
combat mechanics.
Yeah.
But like, you could play that up and still really tell this story, and there's like enough meat on these bones for a movie, like for sure. So I think it's great. I really hope that actually comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too.
We can't talk too much more about the story without getting into spoiler territory. So let's backtrack and talk more about the shooty shoots, which are pretty cool.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with the combat. I mean, I think that it is, you know, it's relatively straightforward, but I found it pretty satisfying. I mean, this is a over-the-shoulder third-person game. You know, you've got your little white dot reticle in the middle of the screen. That's what you're aiming, and you're fighting off sometimes hordes of vampires, but they really, I think, you know, if you weren't told that they were vampires, you'd probably say they were zombies. The way they kind of lurch and move at you felt more like a zombie and a traditional zombie from a video game. But of course, the game expands and there's more different bad guys. And, you know, like little, they call them werewolves, but they're like small and jump and you know, they shoot them out of the air a bunch. It feels like, I thought it was pretty satisfying from a gameplay standpoint, just running around with hand, you know, classic two handguns, arms completely outstretched, just 100% of the time running around with your arms completely outstretched, holding out two handguns. Classic.
This guy has incredible arm strength.
Yeah.
Never gets tired, this guy.
But the big thing, right, it's already been mentioned a little bit, but the big thing about this combat, I think really why we all immediately jump to Max Payne is that there's a bullet time function.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you can trigger
a dive button.
Yeah. So You know, you can just enter bullet time by, you know, pressing Y or whatever you have it bound to. And you have a meter that wears down as you're in bullet time. It's a when it's full, it's a pretty fair amount of time. Like, you can be in bullet time for quite a long time. And then also there's a dive mechanic that enters you into bullet time as you dive, which again, like, straight up Max Payne, which, did you guys play the Max Payne games?
Only on the PlayStation 2.
Ages upon ages ago, and I'm not quite sure which one I played. Maybe the first one?
I played one.
Can I ask? You played one and two.
Yeah, I played one and two on PC.
Was the first one the one where there was that crazy level where you were just
following the baby crying?
Yeah, with the blood stain. Unforgettable. Yeah.
That's the first one. At least I think it's the first one.
Really confused me at the time. I think that at the time I was like, I didn't know video games could do this.
I also, for whatever reason, this has stuck with me, is that the Max Payne games were right when I was really into, I hope the FBI is not listening, when I was really into pirating full-on video games off of, like, LimeWire or whatever, you know, and all the insane little bullshit you had to do to get it to run on your computer, and it
you
made
probably
me feel...
had so many viruses.
Oh, I'm sure I did. But yeah, I mean, I remember distinctly downloading and playing a copy of Max Payne 2 on my PC that took me forever to get running, but I loved it. And you know, I think there's some, you know, that game's really dark, this game's really dark, you know, tonally, and then the bullet time and all that. I think it's a pretty easy comparison. Though the one thing that I wish this game had that Max Payne did so well is the sort of set piece bullet time moments. In Max Payne, you would, you know, maybe there'd be like a room, you'd see there'd be three guys in there, and you could perfectly time your dive and go in slow motion and bring down all three guys before they even like turned and looked at you. And sometimes that was required. Like, the only way you could really navigate a combat situation was like perfect execution of bullet time. Maybe it was just my skill at this game, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later, that impacted this. But to me in this game, bullet time was almost exclusively an oh shit button. Really was not something that I felt really cool using, and more something that I felt like I need to get a handle of the situation, because there's five guys and you get killed pretty quickly in this game. Like, if one or two guys get up on you, it's easy to die very quickly. And so I would trigger bullet time to just sort of clear what's around me. Every once in a while, there'd be like a really cool moment where like a werewolf dives at you, you freeze freeze time or slow down time, and blast it out of the air, and it goes flying. There's good ragdoll physics in this game.
Oh yeah.
But for the most part, I'm like, you know, I was actually like really not trying to use the bullet time that much, because that to me was when everything fell through.
Yeah. Something that's, I think, weird about this, like the obviously the Max Payne inspiration is like really like wearing it on its sleeve, but like, In interviews, he's also talked about taking a lot of inspiration in the combat and so on from just like shooters like Quake and things like Hotline Miami. And I feel like in some ways it's more that than Max Payne, because it does sort of lack that. Like, it has that dodge roll, but it's mostly an aesthetic thing. You can do it if it makes you feel cool. But like, controls wise, the game has a button for bullet time, a button for the sort of what do you call it, like the like jump, the leap, roll, and then it also has a button that does both of those simultaneously, which is good. But I almost never used that button, because like really the dodge dive thing, it almost felt vestigial here. It felt like, well, we're doing a Max Payne thing. We've got to have that. That's like the, you know, the time dive thing is like, it's such a Max Payne thing, but it doesn't really work in the style of game they built here. Or it's not really necessary.
Cause you're not like in a game like that with bullet time, you're like entering into a room and trying, and everything's there already, and you're trying to take it down. In this game, everything's coming at you. You know, you're very frequently entering into a space, and there's just a bunch of shit already sort of coming at you, or or it's like waves of stuff that are coming at you, or, you know, breaking down doors and things like that. And it just never really like lines up to where bullet time feels right.
We didn't mention the stakes, which I actually, I'm talking about vampire stakes.
Oh, the, yeah.
But the
key distinction,
the game uses like one thing that I think is quite clever. You're often just breaking all the wooden furniture to get wooden stakes, which I love.
Very funny.
And the wooden stake attack is like very short ranged, but it is a one hit kill on essentially everything. And
the, it can clip together and you can sometimes get two things for one.
You can sometimes stake two or three things that are attacking you at once.
Yeah.
But the, you can only carry around like five of them. The fact that you have that, that's the true oh shit button in this game.
The
fact that all of the enemies are, you know, as soon as they notice you, pretty much mostly, and there are some exceptions to this, mostly just charging you, does make it so that you're not having to like run into unknown situations and use that bullet time. It's more like a traditional hallway shooter where you're pushing forward just enough to draw aggro and then often backing off.
I did that a lot. Enter a room, and pull back and let everything sort of like tunnel through, you know, choke point everything.
Which, I mean, that certainly is something that works in shooters. But it's not exactly, it doesn't work that well with the bullet time because like you're already kind of timing out and spacing out and lining up your shots through that tactic. I would have found it more interesting if there, and we, you do see ranged attackers, and then like a good mix of them. So that once they introduced those, which was quite a while, I think the first ranged attacker you see is like, must have been like 15, 20 levels in. You know, I think it does start to get a little bit more interesting to use the bullet time. I don't know.
It was basically, for me, the bullet time was basically, you know, that one enemy that's like the woman in a wedding dress who hurls like balls of lightning at you.
Teleports around.
Whenever those showed up, I'd hit the bullet time and prioritize killing it instantly before it would teleport away. Because otherwise those things would just kill me. But like, mostly the bullet time would just give me a little bit of extra time to deal with large groups of enemies. And this game throws a lot of very large groups of enemies at you. Like, it, Part of the fun and challenge of this is that, like, you know, you don't generally have like two zombies coming at you. You'll have, you know, interesting level design. There's multiple different ways to get to you, and there's seven or ten or more enemies coming at you, and you have to figure out like how am I going to like circle strafe around this while plugging them constantly with.
Yeah, a lot of ungraceful backward circles from me in this game. A lot of just running around panicked, hoping I could not back into something and get cornered, and just firing, switch weapon, fire, switch weapon, fire, and then hopefully they're all dead by the time all that's on, or you know, maybe
a lot of standing still and waiting for them to get close to me so I can hit them with a stake.
Yeah.
All that said, like, yeah, I don't think this is like 100% perfectly cohesive, but it is fun as hell. Like, I had a lot of fun with it. And it's 50 levels. Each level is very self-contained. We didn't really talk about the structure here, but there are some exceptions. But most levels, there is a great big glowing thing that you can see from across the level, or maybe several of them. Those represent the hostages that you need to go and rescue. You just get to the hostages and they just sort of say thank you and then disappear.
Good throwback on that, too.
Apparently, in the early versions of the game, you had to escort them to the exit, and that did not work. And I can definitely see why that would not have worked.
So they're just like, "Thank you," or they'll be like, "Good luck, asshole," or you know, like it gets They say a lot of different shit.
Yeah. And once you rescue all of them, and maybe there's some mechanics with, like, you know, I need to find the various glowing blue objects to unlock the glowing blue door, that kind of thing. Once you do enough of that, then you have to make it back to the elevator, and the elevator will then descend one more floor to the next level. And I kind of like the simplicity of it. I liked that, you know, the game is drip feeding you story. John constantly monologizes, you know, reminisces about his relationship with Dracula. Something in the level will remind him of something, or he'll just comment on the weirdness of a level. Like, you know, you come into a level and there's some weird piece of furniture, like a giant chair or something, and he'd be like, "Huh, Void's making the chairs big now." You know, like, just he constantly does a bit of running commentary on, like, the weird
another
stuff
bathroom.
That, yeah, and
I hate to destroy this shrine. Lots of shrines. There's a lot of shrines going on.
Uh-huh.
A lot of bathrooms. Lot of piles of wooden chairs in various
very fortunate arrangements. If I'm a Dracula and I'm about to do some sort of world-ending thing and have my hordes of vampires as my guards.
I did always assume this about you, Nate. Go on.
I'm first step one. Get rid of all the wooden tables and shit in my motel. You know what I mean? Like, just starve them of steaks, because this building is populated almost exclusively with wooden furniture that breaks neatly into steaks.
Yep. It's like perforated into perfect sawtooth patterns. What else is there to say about this game? I think, like, I think it's more than the sum of its parts. Like, it mm-hmm. it looks on the surface like a fun throwback shooter, and then once you get into it, its story, its performances, its writing, its music just adds so much to the experience. It's so much more cohesive than it, like, looks at first blush, I think. It does have some weirdness to the combat, but like I said, like objectively, I see some of the like rough edges here, but it got its hooks in me so bad, man. Like, I could, like, it was about 8 hours for me completing the game. And, like, every minute I wasn't playing this game, I was thinking about wanting to go play this game until I finished it. It was very, I was just, like, truly found it very compelling. I'm not sure if that was the case for everybody, but, like, man, I really loved it.
Yeah. So I wanted to wait till the kind of the near end of this conversation to bring this up, because there were a couple things that, like, I think were very specific to me that made me struggle a little bit with this game that I think are worth at least mentioning, but probably not relevant to everyone. I've mentioned, when it comes up on this show over the years, that I have like 8 million different vision conditions. And so the easiest way to explain it is I've, like, essentially a version of color blindness. And the way this game basically has this, like, layer of fog over absolutely everything really made it difficult for me to, like, see things a lot. And so I really did struggle, even though I found the combat fun. I died a lot in this game because I would just, like, not see anything until they're on me and kill me. So I kind of had to do the thing where you kind of memorize where they're coming from and stuff like that. So I think this game wants to be more of like a reaction twitch sort of thing, but for me, I had to be way more methodical about it. And so I guess this is a like a moment for accessibility. There was this game has some really, really awesome accessibility features for difficulty. You can really toggle a ton of different things. But outside of that, there's basically nothing you can do with the, like, the visual aesthetic of the game. And I know that's hard for small indie developers and whatnot. So I always try to have some understanding there. But, like, I was a little bummed I couldn't do anything to make it a little bit better for me, because I really, really enjoyed playing this game. I also had a couple of weird glitches that might have been Steam Deck, since that seems to happen sometimes with Steam Deck. I had a level that the levels sort of shift and mold around. I had one like break where I got stuck in a multi-room corridor that took me forever to figure out that I was just, like, glitched, like, all the way to where I found a lookup for a video and, like, had to find and saw this guy go down a hallway that just, like, literally didn't exist for me. So that was pretty disappointing. It was
I don't know if it was the same level for me, but I had the exact same thing happen to me, I think maybe twice. It's definitely like not an entirely bug-free thing. I mean, most of the bugs were actually kind of charming. You mentioned earlier things like clipping through the walls and you could like take out a zombie by
I don't even think that's a bug. Like that's just I felt that. Like that's throwback. You know, you see the door, they're stuck on the door and there's like four zombie heads poking through the door, so you just shoot them all in the head and they're dead. Like, you know, I like that stuff.
But also like, and I know we, you know, I know you're not, you know, we're on the same page, but also I would just reiterate, this is from a really small team. And built in 10 months. And like, that's one of the things I think is so interesting about Strange Scaffold and Zolder Nelson Jr.'s whole work is that like, he builds small games fast with a small team, and he's not a slave driver. You know, he's very public about talking about like trying to maintain like work-life balance for his team. Like the whole like, I think almost overused now, you know, meme of I want small games, you know, buy or short games that, you know, pay people more money to, you know, worst graphics. You know the meme I'm talking about. I can't quote it now.
Like the core ethos of our entire show.
I think he really embodies that. And
their website in big, bold letters just says better, faster, cheaper, and healthier.
Yeah, that's so great.
They're making their...
So I totally agree with all this. And I don't, I just think, you know, part of what we do on the show, it's part of my experience, was some of these things that like did make me go like, man, another one that I ran into is that because it would take me a little bit longer on some of these levels than I think they expected it to take, the sound would just run out. Like the songs would end and then there would be no sound at all. And
then you start hearing closing time.
Like, but I relied pretty heavily on the sounds of the monsters to know that like they were around me. And so it made it even, it was like compounding the difficulty for me. Like I can't see shit and now I can't hear shit either. So I would just die without knowing anything. So, you know, these things did make it a little more frustrating for me. I was like, just let me turn off the fog and I think everything would be better. But I know aesthetically, and that's probably a lot harder to do than it is for me to say. But, you know, these were things that did make it where I was like, man, I want to love this game. I really want to, because everything else is like, the combat when it was working for me, I was like, I really like this. It's very, very satisfying. Just those things, I kept running into it and it impacted my personal experience. I think the vast majority of people, who don't deal with what I deal with, like won't run into this, but you know, I'd like to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely good to bring up. And I'd also say, like, I didn't have 100% swimming experience with it either. Like, probably one of the main things that bugged me about it was it has, not very many, but it has these boss levels. The bosses are great, well-themed stuff, right? But they're, like, supposed to be these big climaxes. And, you know, a good boss is like a final exam for the mechanics you've already been using, right? This does not do that. The bosses are kind of their own thing. It's not like a totally different game or anything, but it switches from, you know, the whole game being about hordes of enemies juggling, managing aggro, you know, circle strafing, to being something where you have to do like precisely timed dodges and deal with a absolute, you know, bullet sponge monster that's just going to keep coming at you. And none of the bosses were that fun for me. And it ultimately, after a bunch of, repetition and dying, I just went and turned the difficulty down on those. I would say that the difficulty options, you already mentioned that, but like one of the things I really like about this game is that the difficulty options are very granular. So you don't have to just like go to easy baby mode or something. You can say, okay, well, what specifically would make this boss possible for me? And for me, it was like, I would just like to turn incoming damage down by about 20% and then give myself extra stakes or something like that. Like little stuff like that. You can precisely tune what you want out of the difficulty. And then, you know, you can switch it right back after the level. You can set that on a per level basis and it doesn't lock you out of anything as far as I could tell.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. And that's something where gaming has just gotten getting better and better at.
I really appreciate that when it's available. So I would definitely recommend folks check this game out. It's from Strange Scaffold, and it's available on PC via Steam. I think it's also on the Xbox series of consoles. So it's on Xbox One and Series S and X. It is not, as far as I know, on PlayStation platforms yet. But, you know, I did see that they are working on a mobile port of this. I don't know how that's going to go. I can't see playing this on a touchscreen.
That's
mechanic a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
That's for people who are playing with controllers on their mobile devices. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right?
And that's become so common and totally, normal now. I think, you know,
I'm about ready to buy one of those. I just upgraded my phone. Now I have the USB-C on my iPhone, and I don't think I'm going to change that for another few years, so it's probably a decent time to be picking one of those things up.
Actually, yeah, if you have the iPhones with USB-C, like, there's actually a lot of good controller options now, like, because it's basically the same thing for Android that drove the cost of them way down. So even the like high-end ones are like maybe $40, and you can get like an okay, there's a company called like GameSir, I think. I saw a YouTube review of like one of their like telescoping phone controllers that grips onto your phone that was like $20 and looked perfectly fine. So like there's options out there now. Yeah, I still don't have the newer USB-C iPhones. It's probably next upgrade for me, but I'm definitely gonna refresh that and give that another try. And also, hey, now this is a total sidetrack, but hey, now you can get emulators on your phone. Thank you, Apple, for finally caving on that. You had to be beaten into it.
Do we say thank you, Apple, or do we just say thank you?
With under that much duress, you're right.
They got regulated a card that they'd been holding on to for decades. When it seemed like maybe gamers were going to install their legally obligated extra app store in order to get this kind of thing, they're like, well, how do we keep them from doing that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we'll allow it.
Yeah. The kicking and screaming that Apple has done in order to avoid doing basic shit that people like that and allowing like game streaming apps, like, oh my God, come on, man. Anyway, where were we?
And you still can't emulate everything, because if the emulator requires any sort of just-in-time recompiler,
which is basically all high-end emulators.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're never going to see, or not never, maybe, but like certainly not for a while, going to see like GameCube.
I just want to play my Pokemon. All right. I just want my Pokemon Red and my Blue and all that. I don't need everything else. Let me do it. And at least now I don't have to. What were those ones that were getting by for? I think they still get by for a little while, where you download like a photo app, and then an option in the photo app you open up and it's a full emulator. And I love that stuff.
I had one of those for sure. Yeah. I forget what it was. It was like a image gallery that turned into an NES emulator or something.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that's behind us. And the thing to look for is Delta is the app for iPhone that you should be getting. You probably already know this if you listen to this program. It's been number one app on the App Store for the last like 3 weeks. Number one free app because of the incredible pent-up demand for people to play Pokemon on their phones or whatever. Anyway, where were we? This game was good. You can get it. It's $20. It's so worth your time. I had such a blast with it. Do we have time for what's making us happy?
Yeah, I can go quick. I've got a follow-up from the last I was not on the last one. You guys had a great chat though, but on the last episode I had just received, see, this really needs two episodes of discussion on. I had just received my Slay the Spire board game.
Ooh.
And last night I got three buddies together and we cracked it open, and first of all, I don't know why, but the inside of the box smelled terrible. Normally, I like the smell of a brand new board game. This smelled super
fire
weird.
And brimstone.
No, it was like that. I don't even know how to describe it, but it smelled strange. After that, though, it was awesome. I'm like super impressed with what they did. In fact, I feel like they didn't even need to do all that what they did. So it's a 1-4 player co-op game, which I absolutely love. I think turning the Slay the Spire board game, instead of making it something where you're like competing to ascend and slay the spire or anything like that, making it a just 100% co-op game, I think was brilliant. And the way they converted the intricacies of the video game into the board game felt really, really good. It felt like you're playing the video game, but in a more meaningful or a more manageable board game style. Like, you know, instead of you having like 40 hit points and the monsters having 80 or whatever, it's like you have 9 and they have 7 or something like that. So everything, all the numbers are greatly reduced. Everything is way more manageable for a board game. But it was a ton of fun. Like, I played it with 3 other people who had all played Slay the Spire a ton. So we were able to like slot right in and kind of pick it up pretty quickly, since it was so, it really felt like the video game. And then they included, it has like the core game, Acts 1, 2, and 3, but it also has the full Ascension system as well. And it's a type of game where you can actually, like, you know, it comes with unlockables. So there are these decks of cards that are in the game, in the box, that say, like, have a big stop sign on it. It says, stop, don't open until you've unlocked Act 4. And there's a whole thing you have to do to unlock Act 4, which is exactly like you do in the board or in the video game. And even like in the video game, you know, you unlock new cards the first handful of times you play. They put that in the board game. You have a whole deck of extra cards for each class that you unlock by playing the game, and then you can add them into your starter deck. And it just, it's really smart. And the feel of the game, like the you know, the chips and the bits and all that, incredibly well produced.
So it doesn't become too tedious once you're having to like do the math yourself and like move the bits yourself. No,
because that's why. So everything is simplified. So like most attacks are doing 1 damage or 2 damage, or, you know, like, you know, we did like, it does grow, and like, just like Slay the Spire, your engine gets going, and we only played through act 1. The game is actually built out where like playing an act is basically like a good board game evening. And so you're really supposed to like, it comes with all this really smart stuff to help you store the game and actually like save your progress. It's like there's stuff in the box that is meant for putting away active games.
That's fun.
Little labeling things.
I've never seen that.
What's that?
That's cool. I've never seen a game that had like tools for kind of saving your board game state and packing it up and being able to restore it.
Because I played like
later.
Gloomhaven and stuff like that. And you know, that's a big one where you're saving your true. Game. But like, that's all done on written pads and stuff. Mm-hmm. So with this game where you actually have a deck of upwards of, you know, 50 cards, as well as all your relics, all your potions, your money, all of that, as all these little dividers and little things that you do to like save your game. And when we were all done, it was pretty easy to like save our game. And so we're going to try to do act 2 sometime soon. That's as awesome. Well. So yeah, huge endorsement. I'm really glad, you know, this, like, I guess I've only played it once and it was 4 player. It's kind of like the ideal thing. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't scale as well. I don't know. You know, I have very much like my very first experience with it, though, was really awesome. And I think you would like it if you weren't a Slay the Spire fan, but I'm so deep in that well at this point that I really have no idea. And I played with 3 other people that are all Slay the Spire fans. So we are the exact target.
Are there any non-Slay the Spire fans left? Like, I mean, I know I'm like probably the least of any of us, just because I played it a few times, I enjoyed it, and it didn't become my life. But is there anyone out there who hasn't played it at least some? And it's like,
and then Balatro attacked.
Oh God.
Yeah. Right. No, I don't. I mean, obviously, it's one of the, it's, you know, it's a massive game. And I don't know if you, I'm sure you all have seen, but Slay the Spire 2 was announced, which I truly did not expect. I kind of like, it's such a perfect sort of core game. They added 1 new character. And I kind of thought they were just going to move on to a whole new thing. I have like Slay the Spire is one of my favorite games of all time, obviously. And so I have and it's so well handled, and this board game is so well handled. They made it in partnership with the board game company. I have a lot of faith that Slay the Spire 2 is also going to be awesome.
Incredible. Well, I'm really glad to hear that it actually like held up and was like worth.
Yeah, I was really
it's such a ceremony to play a game like that, you know, like setting it all up and getting three or four friends together and everything. It's a lot, but I'm really glad it held up. You know, you basically did, you know, your last week's making me happy again. And so I'm going to take that as permission to do the same. I'll expand on something. Last time we talked, I was like, or maybe it was the time before last, I bored you all to tears by talking about the mod that I had recently done to my GameCube and how I'd been
in Reagan's Retro Corner.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
Well, you know, you all started like shuffling in your seats and were like, God, like wrap it up, Reagan, before I got to talk about one part of that I was really enjoying. And so now I'll do it, which was something called Blue Retro. I'm gonna hold something up. So this is Blue Retro is meant to solve the problem of like old controllers are often kind of gross, and they're, you know, they have like deteriorating thumb sticks and weird rubber and of course they're all wired and you know, wouldn't it be nice if I'm playing my old N64 or my Dreamcast or whatever, if I could just use a controller that I already like. And there are tools for this, but they've all generally been pretty expensive and sometimes had a lot of lag. So like I've had other things that would let you play with modern controllers on old consoles. But like compatibility was spotty, you know, maybe it would only work with certain controllers or they wouldn't work with, you know, like it was just not a good scene. And then there's this open source project called Blue Retro, where this pretty smart guy built software that runs on a dirt cheap, incredibly common Wi-Fi development board called an ESP32. And it's just like one of these things that's like in everything. It's like it's a specific kind of like Wi-Fi chip that's kind of like a development thing. And it's an open source project, so it's all free. And that means that tons of people have taken the software that he wrote and implemented it in various different ways. But you can get these very cheap adapters. I'm holding one up right now that is an example of one that I just bought on AliExpress for $16. And
take a look, listeners.
Take a great look. What I'm holding up kind of looks like a mean squid. It's got a little box that is about 2 inches across that has a DB25 port. That is a like old school serial port, like a 25-pin serial port with the like a screw-in connectors. And then coming out of that, it has 4 Dreamcast cables.
That's so funny.
And nice. This is so something where you
that
can...
That plugs into the entire front of the Dreamcast?
It's pretty ridiculous hanging off the front of the thing. One of the neat things about Blue Retro is like you can open up your Dreamcast and like solder it to the controller ports and like literally install it that way if you want. But this is much simpler. And this is like $16 and will let you connect 4 Bluetooth controllers to your Dreamcast. And I have a similar setup for the GameCube and the N64, and you can get it for practically anything. You can get it for the 3DO if you want, like everything. And it's cheap, and it works insanely well. It's very low lag. You can pair controllers almost instantly. They stay paired. Like Bluetooth controllers are often not a great experience, especially if you're doing something hacky, but like I've been shocked at how well this has worked. So I just wanted to recommend it. If you're looking for like, it's one of those things that's kind of confusing. Like there's a lot of different people that make adapters that are based on this same technology. And sometimes they don't even say that they're a Blue Retro thing. But if you're looking for like, what is the dirt cheapest version of this? There's a company that is based in Shenzhen and sells exclusively through AliExpress, but they have a website you can go to find all of their products. That's just blue-retro.com. Again, this is free software. And so you actually have to buy hardware that runs it. But these folks make very cheap ones. If you want something like very cheap, I want a dirt cheap way to like connect my PlayStation controller or my Xbox controller or whatever to my N64 or something. You can go to this website, you can find what you need, and it's blue-retro.com, and you can get one of these weird squids for like under $20 shipped, which is insane. It's awesome. So I would recommend this for anybody who is still playing on retro consoles, at least to have as like a tool in your toolbox. And it's become like the main way that I do controllers on the Dreamcast, because I kind of hate the Dreamcast controller. So recommended. Blue-Retro.
Cool.
Pretty neat.
I love
that. Is that how we're going to play when I bring the kids around to play Mario Party?
Actually, yeah, what I've been doing, like the kids, I've been handing them my actual Wavebirds for the GameCube, because the kids have a hard time with modern controllers, but the GameCube controller is amazing for kids. Big green button, you know, something shows up on screen. One of the great things about all Dreamcast game, or sorry, GameCube games, is when it tells you a button prompt, it shows you a picture of the buttons, and every button on the GameCube controller looks different. So kids can identify them. They have no problem with it. And so, yeah, I've been giving the kids the real Wavebirds, and I've been playing on a PlayStation controller connected to the thing on the Blue Retro.
Well, we'll keep an eye on my son when he's over there, because he did just chew the rubber off of yet another joystick.
Is your kid a possum? Like,
and he's also 14 years old.
I thought he was done doing this, because he chewed all of them he could get his little teeth on, probably like 2, maybe 3 years ago. And I was like, well, at least he's not doing that anymore. Where so here I find a Joy-Con that's been just thoroughly numbed.
That's ridiculous. No. I definitely saw my son sticking my Wavebird in his mouth, and I tried to shut that shit down immediately. No. Yeah. I was like, kid, this thing is vintage.
It's an antique. It belongs to the museum, not your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
My kids chewed up all my toys.
But yeah, Shade, what's making you happy this week?
Well, I will throw out a video game recommendation, but one that is inappropriate for the show, as I like to squeeze these in here.
So there's Reagan who recommends the inappropriate games.
I've got a mobile game for you guys.
Big titty waifus.
Yes. No, that's it. The game I'm recommending is called Time Locker. Time Locker is a kind of a mishmash. You know, they say basically Time Locker is a mashup of like a shooter, like Ikaruga style. Or your Galagas or whatever with Super Hot on mobile, basically. And at first I was like, man, this is a mobile game ass mobile game, and it's a ripoff. But I can't put it down. It's incredibly addicting. The thing is, so first I grabbed it because it happened to be on Apple Arcade, but I've looked and the non-Apple Arcade version is free and just has some ads in it occasionally, right? So it's a pretty accessible game. Aesthetically, it's very much a ripoff of Super Hot, except, you know, it's not a bunch of little fighting guys. It's like a polygonal bear or a dinosaur with a minigun. And the unlocks are like, you know, coming fast and fun. And when you're playing, you know, it's very straightforward shooter. Their enemies are either black, red if they're going to chase you, green if they're going to drop credits, or blue if they're going to drop a power up. And there's just a huge variety of just goofy looking, low poly, mostly like animals. Like you're mostly shooting things like snakes and dinosaurs, and then occasionally army guys, and then just a mix of random other shit, right? So it aesthetically it's kind of goofy, but it reads really well on the screen. It looks cool when there's just an epic amount of stuff going on. And it's one of these things where as you go, you're collecting different power-ups that give you different ways of kind of shooting. Every unlock you get with the different little critters that you start as, you know, I recently unlocked a Stegosaurus that has a, you know, big spread shot on it. And I unlocked a turtle that shoots little turtles that explode.
And, turtles, you know, just, all the way down.
This stuff is impossible to explain on a podcast. I'm sorry.
I have a question.
Highly
you
addicting.
Said it's like the super hot connection that you were describing. Is that a
you
only moves when you move, or is it just the aesthetics?
That's exactly it. No, it only moves when you move, which is that part of the thing that really works because it's very chaotic and kinetic, and the speed that time is going depends entirely on like how fast you're moving your finger on the screen. Like if you're kind of just like swiping up over and over again to move your character forward, or you know left and right to strafe, and the fact that you can kind of slide over just a little tiny bit just to get out of the way of a bullet and then keep going works really well for a shooter. It's a bullet hell, but you're controlling the pace entirely, so they can ramp it up really high. And the other thing that is going on with that is there's a kind of a wave of darkness behind you, so you do have to keep moving forward to stay ahead of it. And you know, if you just sit still, eventually that wave of darkness will kind of wash over you and kill you. So you, and there's like bosses that are, you know, big, you know, there's like one of them I adore is a large bear carrying a set of weights, like a barbell. And it like waddles up behind you and is like spinning the barbell. And yeah, so you have to stay ahead of those as well. So it's bizarre looking. It's fun. Yeah. The sound is really good. It doesn't really have music. It just has a cascade of like little plinky sounds. Like the shooting is all little teeny plinky sounds. And then occasionally, you know, a boss is coming because you start hearing very calming rain noises that kind of swell into thunder, and then there's a horn and now you have a boss. it's like a lot of different mobile games. You're collecting coins and, you know, slowly getting your score higher, but it really works, really addicting. I recommend it.
Shane, that sounds right up my alley. Super Hot is still one of my favorite games that we've ever done on this show. And making it weirder, I guess, is all that I would really want from more Super Hot. So I think I'm down for super weird Super Hot.
It's kind of a ripoff in some ways. Like, it feels like a ripoff of Super Hot mixed with a ripoff of a bunch of other different things. But, you know, it works.
Yeah, that's tricky when a game comes out with such a interesting, I mean, frankly, it's the most innovative shooter I'd played in years. And so when you come out with like such a unique mechanic, people are going to want to do that again, you know, and it's just like, and it's always going to feel like a ripoff until maybe that mechanic just becomes so used by so many people that it just becomes like a thing that everybody does. But the like time isn't moving unless you're moving is awesome. And I think it would be great if more games would use that and innovate on top of it.
Yeah. It is really interesting that they managed to not only knock off the main mechanic of Super Hot, but also the low poly art style. And to a great extent, the color scheme, like looks a lot like Super Hot. They might as well have called it like, I don't know, Shooter Hot or something like that. They say great artists steal, and they sure did steal here.
Yeah, that I get a little more like, well, come on, like you could have made it like you could mix it up a little bit more than just straight up copying
it's mixed up. Yeah.
Well, that is,
but the mechanic of time moving when you move, I think is cool, and I'd love to see propagated more.
And if you have Apple Arcade, it's ad-free. So
there you go.
Cool.
Nothing in your way.
Well, listeners, thank you for joining us on this episode of The Short Game. You can find our show on the internet at shortgame.fm, which is where you'll find all the links to all the places, including to various podcast platforms. Why don't you leave a review there? Why don't you go to the podcast platforms you don't use and leave a review there? all of them, maybe. That's the thing to do. You can also get a link there to our Patreon. Every patron of the show gets access to our Discord community, which is where we talk about the show. We talk about games that we're playing, episodes that we're planning. It's where we get all of our suggestions for what to play for the show. And that's a big help. I know some people recommended this game to me when it came out, and I wish I had played it then, but I got to it as soon as I could. Loved this game. And you know, join us there. It's great to get recommendations, talk about what you're interested in. Somebody always chimes in when there's a new announcement, and we really appreciate our patrons for that. It's been a mm-hmm. big help. Let's see. Of course, you could also find links there to all of our socials. So I've been Reagan Kelly, and my socials are on there. I'm on Blue Sky and Mastodon.
I'm Nate Heininger.
And I'm Shane Kelly.
And thank you once more for joining us on this episode of The Short Game.